This is the Coastal Walk by historian Stephen Hobbs on behalf of the Heartland Peninsula Association, adapted for audio. This is one of a series of four heritage walks that uncover some of the fascinating history across the Heartland Peninsula. This is Walk 4, the Coastal Walk, a circular walk of approximately 4 miles that includes roads, public footpaths, and some steep and rough terrain. The walk will take you from Stoke through a section of the Southwest Coast Path between Speakes Valley and Heartland Quay. Please adhere to the Countryside Code, especially look but don't touch, respect, protect, enjoy. There are toilets at Stoke Church, where the walk begins, and refreshments available from the Heartland Quay Hotel and Wreckers Retreat Bar at Heartland Quay, about two-thirds of the way round the walk. You should download the associated map for this walk, and may also find it useful to download the text version of this walk, available, along with all the other walks and information on places to stay, eat, visit and explore, from www.heartlandpeninsula.co.uk. Please use the audio responsibly. Take care to stand off roads and away from traffic when listening to the commentary. You are responsible for safely using the audio material. Let's begin. The walk starts in the church car park available on the south and west of St Nectan's Church at Stoke, Heartland. Please observe the notices with regard to parking and access. Stoke is the location for the veneration of the life of St Nectan. And before the Norman conquest, Githa, the wife of Earl Godwin, one of the most important figures in the late Saxon period, translated this into a monastic holding. By the 12th century, this in turn had become a substantial monastery complex. Today, we have such as Heartland Abbey, St Nectan's Well, and the magnificent church as permanent reminders of the devotion of our ancestors. Leave the churchyard by the east gate, which is on the right of the church, as you look at it from the parking area. Pause at the church gate. Just inside the gate are two substantial lumps of squared stone. These were used to support a slate slab within the gate entrance, upon which coffins were rested as the body travelled from life outside the church to the hereafter inside the church. The slate slab was later used as a foundation for a memorial, but rediscovered when the large churchyard cross was erected. It was, in fact, the original altar stone from the church, used up until the Reformation. It bears incised crosses and was broken to prevent reuse. This slab is now languishing against the church tower wall. Walk from the church gate through the short avenue of three pollarded limes until you are facing the church house. Restart the audio there. You should be in front of Church House. This is a good example of such a building, used originally as both a guest house and for holding public entertainment to raise funds for the church in the medieval period. Looking at the front of the building, admire the quality of the stonework and note the position of the original external stair access with its slit windows to the upper floor. At the rear, at the first floor, are two garderobes. This building would have been at the centre of parish life until the end of the 15th century. Opposite the church house is Butler's Cottage, and as the name suggests, was once the home of the butler at Heartland Abbey. It is also thought, by some, to be the location of the original site of the first monastic cell at Stoke. Walk past Church House for a distance of approximately 200 metres, and on your left is the small access path down to St Nectan's Well. Walk down this path to the little stone hut. Restart the audio there. Now enclosed in this shelter, stones in the well are alleged to always show the stains from the blood of St Nectan. Until recently, the water used for baptisms at Heartland was always drawn from this well. The last miracle to be attributed to St Nectan took place here in the 1950s. A pair of lady visitors, staying locally, went to the well in an effort to cure the blindness severely affecting one of them. After bathing her eyes and returning to her lodgings for the night, she awoke to be able to see, a condition which continued until her death. This event was recounted at a church inquiry some time later, but due to the passage of time and the death of one party, it was not accepted as a miracle. Return to the road and continue left, east, to the T-junction. Restart the audio there. You should now be at the T-junction. The cottage on the right is known as the Bear. Now a holiday cottage, it was a public house for a period when the licence was removed from the inn at Hartland Quay due to raucous behaviour. Research into the Bear has revealed that at the dissolution, not all of the property of the defunct abbey was passed intact to the new secular owners, but that the title to the Lord of the Manor at Stoke and some individual properties were retained by the Crown and sold off at a later date. Take the right-hand road signed for Elmscott, then take the next right and stop at the next junction. Restart the audio there. You should now be at a junction where you can go left on the green lane. Continue on this green lane for some distance. As you walk, you will see extensive views over Hartland Parish, Stoke Church, Berry Farm, the coastline, Lundy Island, Cheristow and Harton. You will pass properties called Holmcroft and Wargery. Restart the audio when you reach the Four Cross Way. You should be at a crossroads. Turned right, signed Kernstone, No Through Road, until you reach Kernstone Farm. Restart the audio there. You should now be at Kernstone Farm. Kernstone is a tenement often mentioned within documentation. As with most such tenements, Kernstone was home to a small collective of farmers, each having intermixed allowances of lands and rights, until all the holdings were later combined into one unit, reflecting the improvement in farming techniques. Kernstone also had a water mill, the site of which is now unclear, and allegedly the tenement was home to one of the chapels attached to the main church at Stoke. Kernstone is still part of the Abbey estate, and is an unspoilt set of buildings from an early age of farming. Turn left through Speke's House Gate. The footpath takes you down into Speke's Valley. As the valley reveals itself, stop and look across southeastwards. Restart the audio there. Opposite on the horizon is the hamlet of Milford, one of the four manors mentioned within Hartland in the Domesday Book. Milford was the site of another of the chapels for Stoke, sited just off the common or green, and remains were still visible until recently. Air photographs of Milford show a good example of a medieval strip field system. Below Milford, and towards the head of the valley, there are three water mills and the location of the mansion of the richest man in Hartland in the 16th century. Walk on down to the cliff top above Speke's Mill Beach. Restart the audio by the waterfall there. You should be in the vicinity of the waterfall on the cliffs above Speke's Mill Beach. The immediate landscape here shows the existence of small enclosures made of earth banks. These are sand bins. Sand and gravel were brought up from the beach by panniers on the backs of donkeys. Local farmers and builders would then purchase the product for use in construction or as fertiliser. Most tenancy agreements in Hartland included a defined measurement for the amount of sea sand to be spread on the land per year. The river at Speke's Mill Beach has the highest waterfall in Hartland. All except one of the rivers in the parish that empty into the sea end in waterfalls of various heights. The origin of the name Speke's is unknown, but has been suggested to be connected with the explorer of that name, John Hanning Speke, 1827 to 1864, who lived at Buckland Brewer. An officer in the British Indian Army, he was active on three expeditions into Africa, to Somalia, the Great Lakes and Lake Victoria. But evidence for this link between person and location is hard to find, and the use of the name Speke's would appear to predate the family name. Take the southwest coast path north along the cliff top above Speke's Mill Beach. Restart the audio at the top of the climb by the gate. You should be at the top of the climb by the gate. Look at what is one of the more rare of geological features in England, a sea-dissected valley system. Note how the river, coming down the Speaks Valley, now empties over the waterfall. Then look north, to your right, at the dry valley below St Catherine's Tor, which is the high jutting peak in front of you, and then further north as the valley continues. At one time, the Speaks River continued past the foot of St Catherine's Tor, and through the valley past Hartland Quay and on north. The sea eroded the coastline and some of the land of this route, so these present sections of valley and headland have become isolated and dry. This is termed a sea-dissected valley, and it is visited by geologists, geographers and students as a fine example of the formation. Walk down into the valley immediately below St Catherine's Tor. Restart the audio there. Take note of the line of a winding track that makes its way to the summit of the Tor, upon where it is alleged a chapel once stood. Evidence of a building was recovered from the summit by antiquarians in the 19th century. Some artefacts are on view in the Pope's chamber at St Nectan's Church. Some decorated tiles were found by Mr William Hurd, a watchmaker and early antiquarian of Hartland, when he was a lad on a family picnic. He brought them down to show everyone, but lack of interest made him dispose of them into the hedge. Are they still there, and where? By comparing photographs, it is possible to see that some 40 foot has been lost from the Tor within the last century. This valley below St Catherine's Tor holds one of the unseen statements of status in Hartland. It had been reiterated for many years that the abbot had a swannery at the Tor Marsh. Recent investigation in conjunction with the Department of Archaeology at the University of Exeter has set out to map the valley using modern survey and GPS equipment. The results have shown some interesting detail of the valley floor. The southern, dry section is bounded on the cliff side and against the Tor by an earth bank. The eastern edge abuts the hillside below Kernstone. Within this compound, there would appear to be at least four shallow ponds. These are visible in low shadow across the valley. Walk around the base of the Tor until you reach the stepping stones across the small stream. Restart the audio there. You will notice that on both banks the stream is enclosed by low earth banks. These continue the length of the valley and act as a water impounding device, particularly for the northern valley. Whilst in this northern valley below the Tor, it is worth walking along both the riverside bank and also the stone enclosure wall on the northern side. The riverside bank is a continuation of the impounding system, whilst the stone wall is unusual in that it is a double-faced corn ditch. It's common for a corn ditch wall to be one-sided, often constructed as a slight incline on one side, vertical on the other, and topped with a protruding layer of stone. This allows animals to escape from a field growing crops such as cereals, but stops them from climbing in. Why this wall has protrusions on both sides is unclear. This wall is home to numerous varieties of lichen and similar types of plant life. The bracken and gorse hillside above was one of the last locations where the large blue butterfly occurred. It became extinct in this country in 1979, although there is a reintroduction programme currently running. Continue walking around the base of the Tor to the gate at the end by the river. Restart the audio here. Beside this gate, the adjacent large earth and stone-faced bank is often thought to be the dam that created the swan pool. This is an error, as if you look on the northern side of the bank, you will see a smaller bank system which corresponds with the banks you have followed through the valley. Survey work has confirmed that all these small banks are essentially able to impound water at a consistent level. The large earth bank was in fact built in the mid-18th century in reaction to serious flooding that occurred. It would appear that at one time there was a set of buildings here termed the kennels, and that these and the hounds were washed away in the flood. The hunting committee of the Gorvin Hunt meeting at Hartland Quay commissioned the erection of this substantial wall to prevent a reoccurrence. It is interesting to take a look inside what remains of a cattle shelter excavated into the bank, as its exposed walls display the method by which the bank was built, layer by layer, with a rather crude topping off. To allow control of the water level, a weir or sluice was built in the river and set into the bank just by the present access gates. Some very large pieces of stone were set into the riverbed to form the weir, these having been displaced in the last century, allowing the river to flow unrestricted and the valley to become dry. Pass through the gate and take the path north towards Hartland Quay. Look back occasionally as you go, both to see the full extent of the sea-dissected valley and the spectacular view. Restart the audio when you reach the middle car park at Hartland Quay. You should now be in the middle car park above Hartland Quay. The history of the quay is well documented, and it will suffice to say that the harbour wall was built under an Act of Parliament in the 16th century, gained by Mr. Abbott of Hartland Abbey, and existed until the end of the 19th century, when it was destroyed in two stages by storm. The port was the trade hub for the region, bringing in goods from a wide area and allowing exports, particularly cereals. A fine book is available to purchase from the quay shop, which fully explains the port. If you wish, you can walk down to Hartland Quay, where there are refreshments, toilets and the Fling Museum. If so, restart the audio when you return to this point. Continue up the road to the top. Stop when you reach the Rocket House at the top. You should be at the top of the hill beside the Rocket House. The Rocket House, until sold off, was the building storing the apparatus used by rescue services, which included a breeches buoy system, hence the name Rocket. To allow the rescue teams to practice, a mast was situated on the warren and the rocket was shot by a man running with it at the mast, and then the breeches buoy was set up and used. The road here was a toll road. The road from Hartland Quay into Biddeford was improved under the turnpike system, with toll houses at appropriate points collecting the money. It's alleged that locally people avoided these charges by taking a path that runs along the northern side of the hedge beside the turnpike road. This is now marked by a series of stone stiles as far as the church. Take the gate beside the Rocket House and enter the large field called the Warren. Walk on as far as the ruin on the skyline. Restart the audio at that point. You should now be at the ruin in the Warren Field. This ruin was originally built in the 13th century as a warreners' house, the home and workshop of the keeper of the warren. In this instance, the game was rabbit, the area in front of the house being covered by a number of artificial rabbit warrens. Rabbit was a precious commodity, both as food and as fur, in the medieval period, and was protected against poachers, hence the substantial building built here, allowing a clear view not only across the present Warren Field visible today, but the greater area that the warren once covered. In later years, the ruin of the house was transformed into a summer house and then as a romantic ruin, which enhanced the view from Hartland Abbey in the valley below. Some drawings show this as a church, but this is unlikely to have been the case. Whilst at the ruin, look inside and see the position of a fireplace and the window at first floor height. Take the path that runs back towards the road diagonally across the warren. Notice, as you walk, the remains of a sizeable earthen hillock in the field. This is registered as a burial mound, tumuli, in the Historic Environment Register, but one wonders now if it is actually the last visible remains of an artificial rabbit warren. A photograph taken at the close of the 20th century and used for a postcard does show a number of these hillocks within the field. Whilst crossing the warren, you have extensive views across the parish of Hartland, and on the immediate north is Bury and Markerdon Farms, with a castellated Blegbury farm a valley further on. On the hilltop east above Hartland Abbey is Cheristow, the site of a chapel compound and suggested as one of the early Christian sites in the area. Then, of course, the Church of St. Nectans. Its tower is visible from so many viewpoints, it is known as the Peeping Tom. Restart the audio when you reach the hedge just by the road. Take the path which follows the inside of the hedge, parallel to the road, back towards Stoke and the church. Notice the stone stile here is made up of reused stonework taken from an earlier building. Such stone is also visible within the stone wall just north, and particularly in the stone wall in the field south of the road, and also in the Warren ruin. Whilst climbing the stile, it's possible to see the change in the adjacent head dimensions on both sides of the road. This indicates the original extent of the area of the warren. Continue on towards Stoke on the footpath and restart the audio at the church. You should now be at St Nectan's Church. The church at Stoke was built in the 13th century and is an expression of status to demonstrate the veneration of St Nectan, the presence of a religious community, and no doubt to express the status of the Dinham family, the manorial lords of Hartland. It's known as the Cathedral of North Devon due to its sheer size. The interior is rather plainer than may be expected, no memorials to the early manorial family, for example. This is possibly due to the Dinhams transferring back to their main residence in South Devon before the church was fully completed. Kingscowell does have manorial effigies of the Dinhams, so the church at Stoke is possibly a part-finished project, and one can speculate on what the wealth and desires of the Dinhams would have given if they had remained at Hartland. There are storyboards available in the church which explain its history, and please also take time to inspect the wonderful quality of the paintings in the window glass, which are unusual in that they tell the history of the parish rather than a religious theme. Remember the cost involved in maintaining this building. There is a box for donations by the door. Please be generous. This marks the end of Walk 4, the Coastal Walk. We hope you enjoyed it. There are three more walks in the Heritage series that can be downloaded from our site, and also, for families, the wonderful Hartland Treasure Trail from the award-winning Treasure Trails Company. Plus, there are six beautiful walks to download in print format to help you explore our beautiful coast and countryside. All are available from www.heartlandpeninsula.co.uk. Thank you for listening.